Our lesson tonight is session number 5, and it's going to be 2 totally different pieces, okay? Originally, we had this planned on 2 separate nights, but we decided to put it together. So we're going to see how far, you know, I'm famous for having more than I can do in an hour and a half, right? So we're going to see how far we can get. But the first section that I would like to cover is going to be called the 7 major moves of the Old Testament. And we passed out a map sheet for you so that, I mean, if you want to write on this, you can. A couple of these maps will be on the download on the website. You can Google for these maps, whatever you want to do, but we're going to talk about the 7 major moves of the Old Testament. So really, if you think about the Old Testament itself, that span of time covers about 4,000 years of history. You know, when you start to think about your Bible, I know Sonny's been breaking it down into different sections, right? But if really you think about the Bible as just a history book, it is a conglomeration of how God showed up in people's lives. That's really what it is. And that's where it comes alive to us. Instead of seeing it as a textbook or philosophy book or whatever, you're seeing it as testimonies of people's lives. That's what history is, right? It is factual things that happen to people. So when you start to read the Bible, and especially the Old Testament, you need to think about that as that's 4,000 years of how God interacted with people. So let me see what pleases him, what gets him to come down and interact with me in a good way. And let's see what gets him to come down and interact with me in not such a good way, right? We know all kinds of Bible stories. Some people complained and they grumbled, and what happened to them? Well, there was a lot of complaining and grumbling in the Old Testament. One time the ground opened up and they got swallowed up. Another time snakes came out of the desert and started biting them and people died. I mean, all kinds of crazy things happened when Miriam talked bad against Moses. What happened? She got struck with leprosy, right? So there's a lot of things you can learn. And in the New Testament, in 1 Corinthians, it says, read all those things in the Old Testament because they're examples for you. Things to do and things not to do. Do you want to provoke God to love you or provoke God to bring wrath, you know? So it's all up to what we do and how we act and what we say and how we live our life day to day. So the Old Testament is about 4,000 years of history. We need to ask these questions tonight as we go through the 7 moves. And when I talk about moves, we're talking about geographical moves. People actually move from one place to another place, the people of God. And when you understand the 7 moves of the Old Testament, then you can start putting people into those movements, the covenants that God made, the promises he made with people during that time. But we're going to ask these questions, why was the move made? So every time we get to a move, start thinking to yourself, why did they actually have to make this move? What was the catalyst that got them going? And what were the circumstances surrounding it? Was it something good? Was it something bad? Was it the plan of God? Well, ultimately, everything is the plan of God, right? Yes and no, right? We can make our own plans, and then once we surrender, he can come and make good of the plans that we messed up. But when we yield to him, the big plan, the big picture, that's what we need to start looking for in these moves. What was God's purpose? What was the circumstances surrounding this? Was this somebody deciding to make a move, or were they directed by God? Were there difficult circumstances? Think about the New Testament. Okay, Jesus gave his disciples a commandment to go into all the world and make disciples. But were they going into all the world and making disciples? If you read through the book of Acts, you'll see that they decided to hang out in Jerusalem mostly, right? And so they didn't really want to go out and be missionaries. Until what happened? Persecution came. Persecution came. Well, everybody would say, oh, what a terrible thing. You know, you must be living in sin or being disobedient or whatever. And in a sense, they were being disobedient because Jesus told them to go. And they didn't completely go. So God had to shake them up. And persecution came. And what happened? The church grew tremendously because everybody scattered out of Jerusalem, right? So even though it might look like a bad thing on the surface, we have to dig deeper and see what was the bigger plan of God in that situation. And those are the things that we can bring then back to our own life. When you're in the middle of a big old mess and things are difficult and stressful and hard and you're going through different kinds of struggles and trials and temptations, you have to step back away and you have to ask that question. What is the bigger picture? What is God really trying to accomplish in my life? And I'm going to share a little bit more about that later, so I'm not going to get sidetracked. So how does this fit into God's overall plan? Again, that's the other thing we're going to ask. Much of the Old Testament is just a record of God's relationship with who? Israel. And Israel, we also call Jewish people, right? Judaism is the religion of the Israeli people for the most part. Okay, that's not 100%. Just like we can't say Americans are Christian or Americans are, you know, Muslim or Americans or whatever, right? So Israel is the country. Israelites are the people that live in Israel. And if they're following Judaism, we call them Jewish, right? So there are Jewish Israelis, there's Muslim Israelis, there are Christian Israelis. Does that make sense? So the Old Testament is mostly God's relationship with his chosen people, Israel. Okay, these were the first group of people that God worked through. So here's your first map on the side there. And there's a couple of places that we want to point out. The first place is not on your map. And you'll see that green band that wraps around. This is just to give you an idea. We'll do a little geography lesson, right? Who can tell me what this is? It says at the top right side. What section of the world, the globe, are we looking at? This is the Middle East. Okay, so we're seeing part of Africa, the northeastern side of Africa, and then we're seeing the Middle East with Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Oman, Iraq, Iran, Turkey, up there going into Asia Minor, Russia, and so forth. So this is modern day Middle East. If we were to draw the band on there, we're going to tell you what that band is in just a little bit. But there's a city called Ur of the Chaldees. It's not on your map. And it's approximately right there by, you'll see a river on your map, if you got good eyes. And that's the Euphrates River. And that's where Ur of the Chaldees is. And we're going to look at Ur because a lot of stuff happens from that point forward. The Persian Gulf. The Persian Gulf is the body of water right underneath here. So that's the Persian Gulf, right? Then you have desert. Desert to the west, desert to the east, and desert to the north. This green band that we've been talking about right here is called the Fertile Crescent. And that was a place that just would produce crops like crazy. It was very fertile because you have the river, Euphrates River and the Tigris River. And then Eden, they think, was somewhere up around in this section of that Fertile Crescent. So this is the area that most of the history of the Old Testament took place in. Isn't that amazing? You think about how huge our planet is. 4,000 years of history was condensed right in this area. And the Old Testament, talking about God's people, basically traveled back and forth in this band right here, the Fertile Crescent Valley, right here. They just back and forth. And we're going to look at their movement in those areas. So then you come over to the Mediterranean Sea, okay, on the western side. And then you come to Israel, which is right a little strip in this band, right? And then you come to Egypt. So these are going to be some of our major players. And remember, Ur of the Chaldees. Who was famous from being from Ur of the Chaldees? Anybody know? Abraham. That's where Abraham lived, and that will be one of our movements. So that was his hometown on the Persian Gulf, right? So the Fertile Crescent Valley, that's where I said most of the movement is going to take place. And then Israel, the narrow band, little tiny country, but pretty much everybody knows where Israel is, right? Always in the news. Always the hot spot. Why do you think that is? Well, maybe you'll figure that out after we look at all these movements here that take place with God's people. And then, of course, Egypt is a major player. Okay? So here's another look. When we start going through these different places, Eden, where I told you is probably most likely up in this area here is where they think Eden was. Tigris, the Tigris River is this one right here. Okay, then you've got the Euphrates River, which is this one right here. And then you've got Babylon, which is right here. And then you've got Haran, which is right here. And then you've got the Jordan River, which is here, connecting Sea of Galilee to Dead Sea. And the Sea of Galilee up there. Okay, the Dead Sea at the bottom. Red Sea is right here. That's what separates the Saudi Arabia from Africa. Okay, and then Mount Sinai was down around in this area right here, right at the point of the Sinai. And the map that you have right above it has actually Mount Sinai on there and some of these other places. Okay, so that's where we're going to be looking. Now, Moab was right about here on this side of the Dead Sea. Okay. So the first movement that we're going to look at is Eden to somewhere, because after Adam and Eve got kicked out of Eden, They didn't live exactly there anymore, right? But we don't have a complete record of where exactly they went, to Ur of the Chaldees. So Adam and Eve are living in the garden. The garden was what God had provided for them, right? It was absolutely what we could truly say paradise. They had all the food that they needed. They had the perfect climate. Everything was so great. They didn't even have to wear clothes, and they weren't even worried about it because they looked great, you know, and they were fit. No, I don't know. So anyways, it wasn't an issue because sin hadn't entered into the world, right, to mess up our thinking. That's really where everything started, right there in the Garden of Eden. So Adam and Eve are in this place that God prepared for his people. God said, I want to create something in my image, something like me, and I'm going to put them on the earth, and I'm going to let them rule over this earth, and I'm going to just create the most fantastic place for them to live. That was the Garden of Eden. But he told them there was one tree, the tree of what? Knowledge that they were not supposed to eat the fruit of that tree. Why? If they ate the fruit, they would die. And along came a serpent, and in the serpent was who? Satan. Okay? Satan saw this animal, the serpent, and he said, this is the craftiest animal I could see, man. I'm going to use this animal. That ought to tell you something. Be careful about your attitude, right? Because if you've got a craftiness in your attitude, then the enemy will be looking to use you. Okay? So here's this snake, this serpent. He's crafty. He's cunning. He's scheming. And the devil says, this will make a good match for me. So let me go influence this serpent to go talk to Eve. So first of all, he separates Eve away, right, and starts talking to Eve away from the husband, who has total authority to rule on this earth. And eventually we know that she eats and he eats, and what happens? Their eyes are open and they have sinned. What was the sin? Was the sin that they actually ate of the fruit? No, the sin was disobedience. They did not obey God. So why did they get kicked out of the Garden of Eden? What was the first move that happened to God's people? They got kicked out of the place that God prepared for them. Why? Because they didn't obey one simple thing. Don't eat from this tree, right? So they were driven out of the Garden of Eden, and they began to migrate south. So if you look on your map, they started going down into that Babylon area, the Ur of the Chaldees area, down to the Persian Gulf, and they started multiplying. But as they multiplied, what else multiplied? Evil and sin and wickedness. We were teaching in the Spanish youth group, Volumen. We went through the book of Genesis, and they asked me to come in. They had already started that book because they got to some really interesting parts in the book of Genesis, and that's pretty heavy stuff for kids to go through. I mean, it's like everybody's sleeping with everybody, you know, the kids are, you know, tricking their dads into sleeping with them to have kids because they're afraid they're not going to have kids, and I mean, it was just like all kinds of crazy stuff, and all the kids are like going, whoa, you know, and we're saying, this is how people are without God. This is wickedness. And that's what happened. It just multiplied and multiplied and multiplied, and it got so bad that what did God do? He sent the flood. He said, man, these people that I created in my image are so far from my image. I got to wipe them out and start over again. And he started over with how many people? Eight. And who was the patriarch of those people? Anybody know? Noah, right? So Noah, he was in the ark. And after, you know, the flood dried up, the ark sat on what mountain? Ararat. And there, if you watch Discovery Channel and all that, everybody's looking for the ark, you know, up in the mountains. And that was up there kind of by the Garden of Eden, is where Mount Ararat is, up in that area. So they had migrated down south, but then they got in the ark, and the ark brought them back up north. They sat on the mountain. The water dried up. They get out of the ark. They start to repopulate the earth. And what do? They start drifting south again. But they went even further this time. So they keep populating that same area, okay? If you want, these scriptures and these notes are going to be up on the website, so you don't have to write all these down. I just put the scripture references for this first movement. So the first movement is from where to where? Eden. Everybody say it with me. Eden to somewhere to Ur. Okay? Ur of the Chaldees. So the second movement, they're living in Ur. That's where Abraham is. God chooses to use Abraham. Abraham becomes the father of our what? Faith. He is the father of our faith, right? And God appears to Abraham. And at that time, his name was actually what? Abram. Okay? He got a later name change after he had an encounter with God. And he was called the father of many nations. That was actually what his name became. Hi, I'm Abraham. Abraham means father of many nations. So basically, every time he came into a tent or he introduced himself to somebody at the marketplace, he was basically telling them, hi, I'm the father of many nations. I'm the father of many nations. They're like, okay, you don't even have any kids and you're like 90-something years old, you know? But God changed his name so that he could start saying in faith what God was going to do, right? And so meanings in the Bible of names are very important. And you'll see a lot of people get name changes in the Bible when they have an encounter with God, because God gets them starting to talk in faith then about themselves. It's important what you name your kids. In Africa, man, they would name kids all kind of crazy stuff. Like one kid, his name was Risasi, which is bullets. Another kid, his name was Maumivu, which is hurts and pains, suffering. You know, Mateso, persecution. I was like, what? Can't you come up with a better name than that, you know? So naming your kids and naming people, that's an important thing. So Abraham got a new name. He became the father of many nations. God made a promise to him. And the promise was that he would be a mighty nation. But it was just him and his wife Sarah, okay? And he said, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to bless you with cattle. I'm going to bless you with land. I'm going to bless you with all kinds of things, not so that you can hoard them for yourself and just keep them for your own family. But God said, Abraham, I'm going to bless you so that you can bless all the nations. Because when you start blessing all the nations, they're going to wonder how come you're so wealthy. And then you're going to tell the story of how I brought you out of your homeland and how I multiplied you and how I provided for you. And that's going to be a testimony, and you're going to make my name famous. You know, we sing songs like that, right, on Sunday mornings? We're going to make his name famous. How do we make his name famous? Well, when God begins to bless and prosper our life, then that draws attention, right? And if we use that blessing and that prosperity for his kingdom, then we have an opportunity to tell people about him. And so we're sharing the gospel. How many people, you know, have you ever seen down and out, desperate, and you just really had a burning desire to go ask them, how did they do it? How did you get to be homeless? I really want to know the secret to your success. Did you ever think about doing that? Somebody struggling to pay their bills. Have you ever wanted to go and ask them financial advice? No? You didn't? Okay, so God's people, he has a plan for his people, and it started with Abraham. He said, I'm going to take you out of your country. Why do you think God needed him to be out of his country? To get away from his family and his family influences, because they were wicked. What else? His comfort zone and his dependency, right? He couldn't come back and say, I built this all up. My herds prospered because, you know, I had this and I had that. You know, I had the inheritance from my family. They passed it down from generation to generation. It had to be totally a God thing. So he said, you know what? Leave all your stuff there. Get up and go. Just get up and go. And that's what God told him. It was a faith journey. Get out of your country. And Abraham said, well, where am I supposed to go, Lord? And God said what? I'll show you. Just start going. Have you ever had an experience like that? He had a faith journey where God said, get up and go. And you thought, what? This is terrible. You know, he's persecuting me. What did I do? There's sin in my life. Everything's wrong. No, pull back away from the situation. Say, okay, what's God trying to do? What is he trying to do in my life? Was it a bad thing that he told Abraham to get up and get out of his country? No, that was the best thing that could happen, because then it showed total dependency on Father, totally dependent on him to bring everything that he needed, right? He had to protect him on the way. He had to provide the food. He had to provide the clothes, the shoes. I mean, there's no stores out there in the middle of the desert, right? So God had to be his everything. And that's why he became the father of faith. Because he said, you know what? I've heard God's voice. I'm going to get up and I'm going to go on this faith journey. I don't know where I'm going, but to move was part of the command. So why did they make this movement from Ur of the Chaldees up to Haran, that northern stretch? Because God said, get up and go. And he did exactly what he said. So Abraham didn't go all the way into the promised land immediately. What is the promised land? What country that we mentioned in the beginning? Israel, right? Became the promised land. So he didn't make it all the way to the promised land on this first little part of the journey. He only made it to Haran. And when he got to Haran, something significant happened there. He stayed there until his father, Terah, died. Okay? So he began his faith journey. His father's getting old. He's dying. And they stopped there at Haran. And when the father died, then they began to move again. And you can find that in Genesis chapter 11. So the third move, Haran to Israel. Okay? Haran to Israel. God renewed the commission. After Abraham had been there for a while, he said, okay, your father has passed. Your time of grieving is gone. Now it's time to get up and keep on going on this faith journey. Right? So what can that tell me about my life experiences? That sometimes there will be pit stops. Sometimes there will be places where it seems like the plan stalls out. Right? Other things happen to interrupt the plan. We think it's an interruption. But we have to look beyond and again ask that question, what is God's bigger picture? What are the circumstances? Why is this happening? Right? So he renewed that commission. And Abraham was on the move again. So God began to grow the nation. As they began to move, they began to multiply again. His herds began to reproduce. And it had been 25 years since the original promise of, I'm going to make you a mighty nation. Now, to become a mighty nation, you have to have what? People. And where are the people going to come from? If he's going to be the father of the mighty nation, where's the people going to come from? It's going to come from him, right? He's the father. He's got to give birth to something. 25 years pass, and there's still no son, no daughter, no nothing. The goats are doing good. The camels are doing good. You know, the crops in the field are doing good. But he doesn't have anybody to become a mighty nation. So he takes things into his own hands, right? Him and Sarah plan a little scheme, and they had servant women in those times. And so what did Sarah say? I really want a son. I want this promise to come forth. So you go in and sleep with my husband. I mean, that's pretty twisted right there, isn't it? Okay, so how many of you wives would want somebody to go sleep with your husband just so you can have a kid? We would be really ministering to you hard if you did, because something's wrong in your mind. You're not thinking right. You're not thinking God thoughts. Right? So Sarah is getting anxious. She's trying to take things into her own hands. And sure enough, she sends her servant woman in there. She gets pregnant, and out comes who? Ishmael. And Ishmael, poor guy, he just had a tough life from that point on, right? So here we are, 25 years later, Ishmael's born. But then after Ishmael is who? Isaac, born of Sarah and Abraham. So God begins this nation when they move from Haran to Israel. They actually got to the promised land. Then what started happening? The promise started being fulfilled. Do you see that? When he took the pit stop in Haran, he didn't have kids there. Why? Because he wasn't where God wanted him to end up being, right? He had to get all the way to Israel. Once he got to Israel, lo and behold, that's where Isaac was born, right? So isn't that amazing? If God tells you to get up and go, and things delay you along the way, don't lose heart. But when it's time to get back up, you got to keep on going, because that's when he's going to fulfill all the things that he's promised, right? So don't get discouraged along the way in the journey. So the next move is from Israel to Egypt. So they're living in Israel. Everything seems to be great. And then they make a move to Egypt. Why in the world would they move to Egypt? Well, do you remember the story of Joseph? And I guess Siri's going to go into more in depth on Joseph's story, perhaps in this series. But Joseph was the second youngest son, right, of the 12 tribes of Israel. Okay, and Israel had another name first. What was it? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Jacob's name changed to Israel. He had 12 sons who became the 12 tribes of Israel. Okay, so Joseph was second to last. Who was the youngest one? Anybody know? Benjamin. Okay, so little Benji, he was the baby of the family. Joseph was the favored child, right? Because that was the son born to the wife that Jacob, Israel, loved most. So he was the favorite child. He got the pretty coat, you know, the nice jacket, showed it off to all the brothers. He started having dreams. And the poor guy didn't have any sense in his head because he started sharing the dreams with his brothers. And guess what the dreams were about? All the brothers were going to bow down and serve him. And in that culture, that was not a cool thing to say. Because the older ones are the ones who have honor. The blessing gets passed on to them. The family inheritance gets passed on to them. They take dad's spot when dad passes on. They become the leader of the family. So here's number 11 in the lineup saying, hey guys, guess what? I had a dream last night and y'all are going to bow down and worship me. And they're like, I don't think so, little brother. That's not going to work. So he already, you know, was favored, spoiled by his parents. The brothers didn't like him. Then this kind of just put him over the top. So what happened? They were out hunting one time, and here comes Joseph to see what's going on. And they get so upset at him that what do? They throw him in a pit. And they're actually going to kill him, but one of the brothers says, no, we can't kill him because this is the kid that, you know, our dad loves. And so they said, okay, well, you know, here comes some guys, Midianites, they're walking by with their camels and all their loads, and they're going back to Egypt. They said, well, why don't we sell him as a slave then? So they sell him into slavery. Now, at first blush, first glance, you would think that was a terrible thing, right? If you were Joseph, how would you be feeling? Here you are, sold out by your brothers. You're in a pit. You are being sold now as a slave. You were God's favored people, and now you are being sold as a slave. You're being dragged off to some country you've never even seen, Egypt, with these strange guys, with their strange ways, and their strange language. How would you be feeling as Joseph? Wouldn't you say, this is probably not part of God's plan? That's what we would say in our human thinking, right? This is something bad. This is not part of God's plan. How could God let this happen to me? His child, his favorite child, the one he gave dreams to, the one he has plans for, you know, the one that's going to rule over his brothers. And of course, you know, he had another dream. You remember the other dream? It got worse. He dreamt that his mother and father were going to bow down to him, and he told them that one too. And they really all didn't like him then, okay? But this was really an act of God, wasn't it? Because we have to see the overall history of what's happening to God's people. God knows everything. Do you believe that? Do you believe that one of the attributes, one of the characteristics is that he is omniscient? That means that he knows everything. There is no limits to the mind of God. He's already seen your end. He saw when you began, before you were born. It's something that totally blows our mind away and we can't comprehend because our minds are just stuck right here inside this little skull in this brain. God doesn't have a brain like we do. He is unlimited, so he knows everything. He's been there, actually, from the beginning to the end. He's been in the midst of it all. That's pretty amazing if you think about that. He has actually been there. Whatever you're going to go through tomorrow, he's already been there. So if we stay close to him, we learn from his word how people made it through different situations, then we can say, you know what, I've got hope because God's in this situation somewhere. I just have to figure out where. And the only way I'm going to figure out where is if I stay close to him. If I start listening to his voice, I start getting the word inside of me. So like Siri was saying, the Holy Spirit has something to work with on the inside of me, bringing back, hey, do you remember when Joseph was in the pit? Do you remember what that was all about? This is exactly that experience for you. You're in the pit right now, but this is not the end. I'm going to bring you out. You know, so that's how the word becomes alive to us and gives us strength and courage in times that are difficult. Bringing the light into the darkness, right? Okay, so it was an act of God with long-range consequences, but they couldn't see it at that point in history. They only saw, Joseph only saw the walls of the pit, right? And then he probably saw the backside of a camel for a long way. Nice journey down to Egypt. But Joseph, after he got to Egypt, what happened? He started getting blessed. He started prospering. And the Bible continually says that God was with him. You know, I always looked at that differently until actually I started studying this again for this lesson. And I totally got a different angle on this. God blessed him. God was with him. You know, I always used to think like, okay, here's poor Joseph in this terrible situation. But you know what? Hey, God was there. Did you always think of it like that? Instead of thinking of the reverse way, God had already been there. God had already planned this all out. And God was just pulling Joseph along into the plan. But Joseph is going kicking and screaming because he's looking at it from his natural mind, right? So how often do we do the same thing? We get blinded with tunnel vision. We can only see our circumstances, and we don't get out of the box. We don't step back and say, Father, show me something else because this is not it. This is not your plan. This is not the whole thing. So he started getting blessed. Of course, there's a whole lot of stuff that happened. You know, he's in and out of jail. He's blessed. He's not. He's accused of, you know, almost raping Potiphar's wife. All these kind of things. But yet Joseph stands, you know, with perfect character in those situations. And eventually he has to interpret a dream for Pharaoh. Pharaoh has a dream. And what is that dream about? There's going to be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of what? famine. So Pharaoh is so impressed because nobody else can interpret this dream that he says, hey, Joseph, I want you to be in charge of this plan. We got to come up with a plan. So in these 7 years, we're going to stockpile all the food that we can so that we have enough to feed our nation during the 7 years of drought. So God gives Joseph an incredible plan, and they start storing all this kind of stuff. And he's like second in command of the whole nation, right? So the storehouses are opened up, and okay, drought comes, the storehouses are opened up, and not only do they have enough to feed the Egyptians, but they have enough to feed all the nations that start coming, right? So here's Joseph down in Egypt. Where is the rest of his family? Up in Israel, right? They think he's dead. They're up in Israel. They hear about this storehouse in Egypt where you can get food. So they pack up their stuff, and they come down. The brothers come down. The brothers come into Joseph's presence, and what happens? Joseph immediately recognizes them, but they do not recognize him, right? Now here's the big test of character. What is Joseph going to do? Is he going to lock them up, kick them out, kill them? He could pretty much do whatever he wanted to at that point, but he went and he wept. That was his breaking moment. That was his moment where he was talking with God, and he was saying, Father, okay, this is opening up a big old wound in me again. The hurt, the pain, the things that I've never processed through because I just buried them and all these other things that have been happening. And now I'm confronted with my brothers and I have a choice to make. I'm either going to forgive them and I'm going to have restoration of relationship with my family, or else I can torture them and I can give them the same amount of pain that they gave me and even worse. So what did Joseph decide to do? He forgave them because he was looking at things through the God filter. God began to speak to him and say, hey, Joseph, you know what? When they threw you in the pit, that was really part of my plan. When they sold you to the slave traders, that was part of my plan too, because I needed you to get down here to Egypt. I needed you to come down here. I needed you to interpret a dream. I needed you to become second in charge. I needed you to store up all this food. I needed you to do these things because drought was coming, and now you get to be the one who is instrumental in saving your family, saving Israel, saving God's people, the chosen people. So he began to see things from a totally different perspective. He saw it as the plan of God. God put this into motion. You can read about it in Genesis. He actually says words like that. This was God's plan. Hey, guys, don't be upset. You know, after they go through that whole thing, you know, of putting the money in the bag and keeping Benjamin there and all that kind of stuff, and they come back down, he says, don't be afraid because I've forgiven you. And don't be, you know, sad, because this was the plan of God. God was with me all the way through this situation. And look at what he did now. We're reunited as a family, and we have all the food that we need. And when Israel came down, they started prospering, right? So Joseph had the entire family brought down to Egypt. So they came from Israel to Egypt. Now, how long did they stay there? They stayed there quite a long time. Now, do you think it was probably God's best plan that they stay there for 400 years? Do you think God intended for them to stay that whole time? Or maybe do you think it was God's plan for them to stay during those 7 years of drought and then go back and reclaim the promised land? Because where was the promised land? Where was the land that God gave them? It was not in Egypt, right? So sometimes when you get to a destination that's on God's plan, you can get a little comfortable and you can start just wanting to stay there a little bit longer than you're supposed to. And so what happens after those 400 years? We begin to move from Egypt back to Israel, but it's after a long period of time. How long? 400 years. This was a time that Joseph's family was treated royally in the beginning, you know, during those 7 years of drought after that. But then there was a Pharaoh who came on the scene who didn't know Joseph and his family. And so guess what started happening? There were some drastic changes. The Egyptians started fearing the Israelites because they were getting stronger. They were multiplying. God was blessing them. And so here's these foreign people right in the middle of their country getting stronger, getting more, getting, you know, intelligent, having great crops, having great herds. And so these guys are sitting back going, this is a problem because these guys are going to take over. They're going to turn on us and they're going to take over our whole nation. So what did they start doing? They started oppressing them and suppressing them. They became the brick makers for all the things that were being built in Egypt. They became slaves. Little by little, they became slaves. God's people were in bondage. So what turned the tide in this move? What happened after those 400 years? They finally started getting tired of being slaves. They woke up to the fact that they were God's chosen people, and this was not their land. Their land was back in Israel. And so they began to cry out to God, and they began to repent, and they began to seek His face. And so what did God do to answer? God's answer was to send who? Moses, a little baby spared, because they were trying to kill all the babies, remember, at that time, trying to hinder the plan of God. But when God wants something done, He's going to get it done, right? So Moses' life is spared. He grows up right there in the household of Pharaoh. He learns all about, you know, everything. And then we know there's a big, you know, I'm missing big chunks here. We can't go through everything, right? So Moses goes out to the wilderness. He comes back. He begins to do signs and wonders to prove to Pharaoh and to prove to all the Egyptians that God, Jehovah, is the real true God. And that there's no God of the Egyptians that can rival Him. So, you know, the snake eats up the rod, eats up the snakes, all that kind of stuff. The water turns to blood. There's the grasshopper thing that happens. The firstborn all die, and the Passover, all those things. That was the final thing, and Pharaoh just finally said, what? Okay, man, all the firstborn kids are dead. Get out of here. I don't want to see you again. Just go. And so they just picked up all the loot from the Egyptians, and they started heading back to where? Israel. Why do they keep going back to Israel? Because Israel is there. Promised land. That's the place that God promised to them. Why does Israel still fight today for that little strip of land? Because it's God's promise to them. And that's what the politicians and the world leaders don't understand. You know, they think it's a political thing. It's not a political thing. It's a God thing. God said, these are the borders. This is your land. I'm giving it to you. God created this earth, right? So God has the right to make the borders and the boundaries. It's not up to man to do that. That's where we got into the problems, because man came in and redrew the boundaries of what God had established. So they go back to Israel after all these signs and wonders, and it takes them how long to complete the journey? 40 years. If you look at your little map and you look at that little Sinai area, you know where Mount Sinai was? Not big Saudi Arabia. The little piece in between Egypt and Saudi Arabia. That's where they basically circled around and around and around for how long? 40 years. It does not take 40 years to get from Egypt to Israel. Why did they have to circle around for 40 years? Yeah, but and where did the disobedience stem from? They had lost their relationship with God, right? They had started being oppressed, so their mindset was slavery mindset. They had started following after the gods of the Egyptians. They started doing things like the Egyptians do after 400 years of living under their oppression and rule. So they got out there to the wilderness, and God said, guess what, guys? We're going to do a few laps around this mountain because we got some issues to work out of y'all's hearts. And that's where all this stuff, the complaining and the murmuring, and, you know, God would provide for them food, and they didn't like it. And they say, we want meat, so you give them quail, and they didn't like it. You know, it's like they could never be happy. He brings water out of the rocks. They didn't like it, you know. And so God's like, man, another lap around them, you know. That's another year, dude. Another year, dude. So they just keep on going until that whole generation dies off. Why? Because God had to get that mindset out of His people before the people could go back and take the promised land, right? So you have to start thinking about the bigger pictures of all these movements. Why did the people move all these places? Because God had to work things out of their character, right? So why does God have us go through all different kinds of things? Because God has to work things out of our character. How are you on the 40-year plan? You like keep going around that same problem 40 years, man. Okay, He's waiting for it to die out. As soon as it dies out, then guess what happens? You get to go into the promised land, right? You keep being brought back to the promised land. Abraham has a pit stop. His father is dying. The father dies. Abraham gets back up. He keeps going. He finally gets to Israel. God fulfills the promise, okay? There's drought coming. God knows there's drought coming. So God puts this incredible plan into action to get Joseph down to Egypt. It involves a little suffering, yes, on Joseph's part. But the bigger picture was, it was God's plan to save Israel in the time of famine, right? But they stayed there a little bit longer than they were supposed to. About like 393 years too long, right? So all these things started getting ingrained in them where they forgot their relationship with the Lord and started living like slaves, following other gods. And God said, okay, I'm hearing your prayers. You guys have finally had enough. You're crying out for me again. This is revival time. I'm taking you out of Egypt. Get up and go. But when they got there into the desert, he realized, whoo, well, he already knew, right? These guys got a lot more issues than I thought. So we're just going to go for 40 years around the mountain, get all this stuff worked out, right? So all those things are in Exodus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua. Again, these are all be posted on the website. So they're in Israel. Life is good. But then they have to move to Babylon. They're actually there for about 1,000 years. They're in Israel 1,000 years. They're prospering. They're doing God's plan. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of that, what happens? Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar comes on the scene. He's the king. And he drags them off into captivity. And they had to stay in captivity for how long? 70 years. Okay, that's in 2 Kings, 2 Chronicles. The move from Israel to Babylon. Now I'm going to challenge you, go back, read about that, and ask yourself those questions. Why did they have to make this move? What was going on? And what was God's bigger picture? What was his bigger plan? Well, Israel wasn't doing so good in those days again, right? So God had to work some more issues out of them, and God felt like the best way to work those issues out was to do what? Let's put them back into captivity again. And still they start crying out to me and remember their ways, because the prophets had come through and the prophets had been telling them what? Y'all need to repent. Y'all need to return to God. If you don't, you're going to go into exile. So they were warned. They were warned and warned and warned. And finally God said, hey guys, I see your heart is hard. And I guess the only way we're going to work this issue out of you is let it happen. Have you ever been in one of those kind of moves of God that you just resisted, 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 and God said, okay, hard head, you want it to happen that way? I'm just going to step back here, and you just go down your path and see how far you can get. And when you start crying out to me and you truly start repenting again, I'll be right there to pick you up and get you back on track, right? You can take these moves of Israel and you can apply them straight to your own life. Why were they moved? What were the circumstances, and what was God's bigger picture in that situation? Are y'all hot in here, or is it just me? Yeah, I'm seeing people. Can we make it a little bit cooler for everybody before they pass out? We got a ways to go. Okay. So the prophets start warning them. They tell them to repent. And the prophets even say, when you do get taken, because God knows what's going to happen, right? You're going to be in exile for 70 years. Sure enough, at the end of the 70 years, Babylon is overthrown by the Persians, because the Babylonians were not going to let the Israelites go back home. But the Israelites started crying out to God. They started repenting again, right? So Cyrus, the king of the Persians, actually released all the Israelites. They went back to Jerusalem right at the right time. Now, isn't that a coincidence? At the end of the 70 years. Is that how it happens? Now, if you read in the book of Daniel, so all the prophetic books are happening, you know, around this time of exile, before, during, after. Daniel starts reading in the scriptures and he sees, hey, it's supposed to be 70 years that we're in captivity. And it's about 70 years. And so Daniel actually prays. He starts praying and saying, God, forgive us. Forgive me. I have sinned. We repent. We turn to you. And one of my favorite parts of his prayer, I think it's like Daniel chapter 9 or 11, 10, somewhere around in there. He says, do not delay. Do not delay. Daniel knew it was time for God to do another move with his people, because the prophets had said 70 years, and 70 years was coming up. So Daniel started praying. People started praying. They started repenting, and they cried out, God, don't delay. Don't delay. The 70 years is up, and we want out of here. We want to get back to our promised land, back to that place where we're supposed to be. And so what does God do? He lets them go back under King Cyrus. And those things are found in 2 Chronicles and in Ezra. That's the move back from Babylon to where? Israel. Okay. Those were the 7 major movements of the Old Testament. Did y'all get something out of that? Was that boring stuff from the Old Testament? Did it apply to your life? Can you get anything out of that? That's what we're talking about, how you can study the Bible and make it relevant and interesting and exciting. You know, now you can even go farther. There's actually a whole series of getting in depth in the Bible, and they break it down to the like 20 major characters, I think it was 9 major covenants, the 50 major stories of the Old Testament that goes right along with these movements. So if you want to do a more in-depth study, you can talk to Sonny or myself, and we'll tell you about those resources, and you can do an even bigger study like that.